The wind wagon held no further sign of Templar, voice of the tree, Het Mastin. After an hour of searching, the group met in the stateroom of the missing man. The blood there seemed darker and drier.
"Is there a chance that we missed something?" said Father Hoyt. "Secret passages? Hidden compartments?"
"There's a chance," said Kassad. "But I swept the ship with heat and motion sensors. If there's anything else on board larger than a mouse, I can't find it."
"If you had these sensors, why the fuck did you have us crawling through bilge and byways for an hour?"
"Because the right equipment or apparel can hide a man from a heat and beat search."
"So, in answer to my question," said Hoyt, pausing a second as a visible wave of pain passed through him, "with the right equipment or apparel, Captain Mastin might be hiding in a secret compartment somewhere."
"Possible, but improbable. My guess is that he's no longer aboard."
"The Shrike," said Martin Silenus in a disgusted tone. It was not a question.
"Perhaps. Colonel, you and the Consul were on watch through those 4 hours. Are you sure that you heard and saw nothing?"
Both men nodded.
"The ship was quiet. I would have heard a struggle even before I went on watch."
"And I didn't sleep after my watch. My room shared a bulkhead with Mastin's. I heard nothing."
"Well, we've heard from the two men who were creeping around in the dark with weapons when the poor shit was killed. They say they're innocent. Next case."
"If Mastin was killed, it was with no death wand. No silent modern weapon I know throws that much blood around. There were no gunshots heard, no bullet holes found, so I presume M. Lamia's automatic pistol is not suspect. If this is Captain Mastin's blood, then I would guess an edged weapon was used."
"The Shrike is an edged weapon."
Lamia moved to the small stack of luggage.
"Debating isn't going to solve anything. Let's see if there's anything in Mastin's belongings."
Father Hoyt raised a hesitant hand. "That's, well, private, isn't it? I don't think we have the right." Brawn Lamia crossed her arms.
"Look, Father, if Mastin's dead, it doesn't matter to him. If he's still alive, looking through this stuff might give us some idea where he was taken. Either way, we have to try to find a clue."
Hoyt looked dubious but nodded. In the end, there was little invasion of privacy. Mastin's first trunk held only a few changes of linen and a copy of Muir's Book of Life. The second bag held 100 separately wrapped seedlings, flash-dried and nestled in moist soil.
"Templars must plant at least 100 offspring of the Eternal Tree on whatever world they visit," explained the Consul. "The shoots rarely take, but it's a ritual."
Brawn Lamia moved toward the large metal box which had sat at the bottom of the pile.
"Don't touch that!"
"Why not?"
"It's a Mobius cube," responded Colonel Kassad for the Consul. "A carbon-carbon shell set around a zero-impedance containment field, folded back on itself."
"So? Mobius cubes seal artifacts and stuff in. They don't explode or anything."
"No, but what they contain may explode. May already have exploded, for that matter."
"A cube that size could hold a kiloton nuclear explosion in check, as long as it was boxed during the nanosecond of ignition,"
added Fedmon Kassad. Lamia scowled at the trunk.
"Then how do we know that something in there didn't kill Mastin?"
Kassad pointed to a faintly glowing green strip along the trunk's only seam.
"It's sealed. Once unsealed, a Mobius cube has to be reactivated at a place where containment fields can be generated. Whatever's in there didn't harm Captain Mastin."
"So there's no way to tell?"
"I have a good guess," said the Consul.
The others looked at him. Rachel began to cry, and Saul pulled a heating strip on a nursing pack.
"Remember at Edge yesterday, when M. Mastin made a big deal out of the cube? He talked about it as if it were a secret weapon."
"A weapon?"
"A weapon?
Of course,"
Kassad said suddenly.
"An Urg."
"Urg?"
Martin Silenus stared at the small crate.
"I thought Urgs We're those force field critters that Templars use on their tree ships.
They are. The things were found about 3 centuries ago, living on asteroids around Aldebaran. Bodies about as big as a cat's spine. Mostly a piezoelectric nervous system sheathed in silicon gristle. But they feed on, and manipulate, force fields as large as those generated by small spin ships.
So how do you get all that into such a little box?
Asked Silenus, staring at the Mobius cube.
Mirrors?
In a sense. The thing's field would be damped. Neither starving nor feeding. Rather like cryogenic fugue for us. Plus, this must be a small one, a cub, so to speak.
Lamia ran her hand along the metal sheath.
Templars control these things? Communicate with them?
Yes. No one is quite sure how. It's one of the Brotherhood's secrets. But Hetmes Steen must have been confident that the Urg would help him with...
The Shrike!
Finished Martin Silenus.
The Templar thought that this energy imp would be his secret weapon when he faced the Lord of Pain.
The poet laughed. Father Hoyt cleared his throat.
The Church has accepted the hegemony's ruling that these creatures, Urgs, are not sentient beings, and thus not candidates for salvation.
Oh, they're sentient, all right, Father,
said the consul.
They perceive things far better than we could ever imagine. But if you mean intelligent, self-aware, then you're dealing with something along the lines of a smart grasshopper. Are grasshoppers candidates for salvation?
Hoyt said nothing. Braun Lamia said,
Well, evidently Captain Masteen thought this thing was going to be his salvation. Something went wrong.
She looked around at the blood-stained bulkheads and at the drying stains on the deck.
Let's get out of here.